Mr. Sadasti, Atari 8-Bit Productivity Podcast, Season 1, Episode 3.
Hello and welcome back. I'm glad you've decided to keep listening in, and I'm hopefully getting better at this and hopefully getting easier to listen to. I do want to apologize for the lengthy delay in getting this episode out. There were a number of things that occurred that caused that delay, the least of which was getting sick. Now that I've gotten that out of the way, let's get on with it. This show is about the Atari calculator. You guessed it, it's a calculator program. A fully programmable one at that. It features 145 functions and 100 memory locations. It was originally designated to be released in 1979 on cartridge. However, it was delayed 2 years and released on disk in 1981. Handheld calculators at the time the Atari calculator was devised in 1979, such as the TI-55 or 57 and the HP-34C or 41C, they could handle about 50 to 75 keystrokes and 10 to 20 memory locations. The Atari calculator, having 3K of instruction space and 100 memory locations, was quite advanced, though the A8 package was not very portable and it didn't exactly fit in your pocket. Back then, I had a TI-30, which wasn't programmable at all, but you could spell Shell Oil on its red LED screen, which was 71077345, and then you looked at it upside down. Pretty advanced.
Technical data.
The part number is CX8102. It requires 24K RAM and a disk drive. Had it been released on schedule and as originally intended, it would have only required a cartridge. The publisher was Atari, and the programmer was Carol Shaw. It was commercial software, and its original price was $29.95, which in today's dollars is $80.88. Its release date was November 1st, 1981, and Atari Mania listed it with a rarity of 8.
Usage notes.
Before I can talk too much about Atari calculator, I need to talk for a second about mathematical formula notation. There are a few different syntax types, but only two are applicable to this episode, infix and postfix. Infix has operator precedence. You put the number, then you put the operator, then you put an equal sign to indicate the problem's end. The expression is evaluated based on operator precedence rules and sub-expression grouping designated by parentheses. This is how most of us are accustomed to resolving mathematical problems. Postfix is almost the opposite. There is no operator precedence, and there is no sub-expression grouping, and there is no equal sign to denote the problem end. The order in which you put the problem together is the order in which it's evaluated. This is important because the two methods will yield different mathematical results. Atari calculator has three modes of operation, two infix modes and one postfix mode. The modes are ALG for algebraic, ALGN for algebraic notation, and RPN, or reverse polis notation. Here's a breakdown of each of the three modes and kind of the difference in the results that you would get. So for ALG, or algebraic, which is your normal operator precedence mode that we're all kind of used to, if you wrote the expression 1 plus 2 times 3 divided by 4, you should get 2.5 as the answer. And that breaks down as 1 plus, and then 2 times 3, which is 6, divided by 4, which is 1.5, so you have 1 plus 1.5 for 2.5. I know it's kind of hard to follow listening to it, but if you look at it on paper, it works out fine. And if you look at the ALGN, or algebraic notation, mode, which is basically the same, but there's no operator precedence, if you take that same expression, 1 plus 2 times 3 divided by 4, what you're going to end up with is 2.25. And how it breaks down is 1 plus 2 for 3, and 3 times 3 for 9, and then 9 divided by 4, which is 2.25. And the last mode, which is RPN, reverse Polish notation, this is, again, with no operator precedence, but it's written entirely different. So you would write 1, 2, plus 3 times 4 divide, and then you would get 2.25. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention. The Atari calculator decimal range in 32-bit is -2,147,483,648 to 2,147,483,647. For a 16-bit number, it's -32,768 to 32,767. And for an 8-bit number, it's -128 to 127. And by the way, if you have a CX85 numeric keypad laying around, this program is well suited for it. I'm going to attempt to describe the screen, although it's probably best if you just look at it on the website. At the top, you have a status line. The status line has several pieces of information on it. From left to right, you have the computational mode, which is going to be like ALG or ALGN or RPN. Then you have the angular mode, which is going to be degrees or radians. Then you have the number base, which is going to be decimal, octal, or hex. Then you have the number display, which is going to be number of bits, and it's going to say bits 16, fix 8, bits 8, etc. Then you have your financial options, which are going to be like compound. The next section of the screen is the middle section, and it has 14 lines total. On the left side, you have the stack display, and on the right side, you have the memory display. Each one displays 10 different locations. The stack has 42 total locations, but only the first 10 are displayed, obviously. If you get too many items on the stack, you get an error that says stack full, and if you try to display the stack and it's empty, you get an error saying that the stack is empty. What else would you expect? There are 100 different memory locations, and only the first 10 are shown as well. That's about 600 bytes the way that they store the items in memory. Next is the lower section. It's made up of 7 lines, and this is the scroll area for the operations. Think of it as your printer tape. And then you have the last line, which is a black line. This is the last entry, so it's really kind of the last scroll area, making the scroll area a total of 8 lines. So when you're working with the Atari calculator, anytime you see a star, star, star in the scroll area, that denotes that the value depicted is a computer-calculated value. As you change modes, there are a couple things that change on the screen. One is the memory locations. Some of the modes have specific functions or labels defined for different memory locations. Now, one thing that doesn't change with modes is the stack display. You have an X and a Y and 2 through 9, where X is the accumulator. I can only surmise that Y is a rough approximate of the Y register of the 6502, if not the literal translation into the application. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the feature set. You have temperature conversion from Fahrenheit to Celsius and back. You have mass, length, and volume conversions, where mass you can convert from kilograms, grams, ounces, and pounds. Length, where you can convert from meters, centimeters, kilometers, inches, feet, yards, and miles. And volume, where you can convert from fluid ounces to teaspoon, tablespoon, cup, quart, gallon, and liters. You also have degree to radian conversions and polar to rectangular conversions. Aside from the conversion functions, there are a lot of math functions. We'll break these down into categories. We've got algebraic functions, which are natural anti-algorithm, common anti-algorithm, factorial, common logarithm, natural logarithm, power, root, and modulus. There are trigonometric functions, which are sine, cosine, tangent, arcsine, arccosine, arctangent, secant, arcsecant, cosecant, arccosecant, and there are a number of statistical functions. You have sigma plus, sigma minus, n weighting, slope, y-intercept, correlation coefficient, return y given x, return x given y, x mean, y mean, x variance, y variance, x standard deviation, y standard deviation, x wing fighter, and y wing fighter. When using the statistical functions, the memory locations 3 through 9 get relabeled. There are two types of financial functions as well. You have interest and annuities. For interest, you get balloon payment, future value, interest rate per period, number of periods, payment per period, present value, and interest compounding mode. for annuities, you get future value annuity due, future value ordinary annuity, present value annuity due, present value ordinary annuity. When you use the financial functions, memory locations 4 through 9 are relabeled. Now they also provide you with bit manipulation functions, which are AND, OR, exclusive OR, shift left, and shift right. If you're a programmer, you know what these are, and that's a good segue into the programming topic. As stated earlier, there are 3,072 bytes of memory available for programming. The accompanying manual is 191 pages and has a large part of it devoted to programming. There are a ton of examples as well. I'll cover some of the important functions in regards to programming, but I'm not going to go over every function of the calculator. You have save and load, which does what you would expect, save and load programs. And you have save M and load M, which saves and loads memory locations, all 100 of them. BASIC or another program can be used to read the memory file that's created and print the contents in a fancy manner, or however you should choose to. You have a list, which will let you see all 0 through 3071 program lines. And you have an NOP instruction, which is mainly used to reserve space for comments or replace unwanted commands without affecting line numbers or locations. There is a PRO and END command, which starts and stops the programming mode, and you have a RUN command, which does what you'd think. There's a DELETE and INSERT, which are used to delete and add commands. Now when you do this, this shifts the locations either up or down. This is important because there are no labels, so when you do a go to, you are actually moving to a location. You also have a stop instruction, or STP, which is used to stop program execution. And you have a CON instruction, or CON, which is used to continue program execution after you've input a value. Atari also included the highly controversial go to command, although it's quite necessary in this application. For conditionals, you get 4. They're all related to the X register. You get X equal to, X not equal to, X greater than, and X less than. The last piece of program flow is the call and return, where you can call a subroutine at a specific location and then return to return from it. Atari also included trace and no trace so that you could debug your programs more easily. And the last command is pause. Though I'm not sure why it's included, because its usefulness is sketchy at best. Alright, to help keep myself honest, like I always do, I actually used the program to do something useful. In this case, I used the Atari calculator to write a simple mileage calculator. You can find the source on InVersaTASCII and a description of how to use it. When you run the program, at the 11111 prompt, you enter the starting miles. At the 22222 prompt, you enter the ending miles. At the 33333 prompt, you enter the number of gallons, and at the 44444 prompt, you enter the price per gallon. It will compute the distance, the miles per gallon, the total cost of the fill-up, and the cost per mile. On the output side, the miles start is displayed in memory location 0, the miles end is displayed in memory location 1, the gallons in memory location 2, the price per gallon in memory location 3, the computed distance in memory location 5, the miles per gallon in memory location 6, the total cost in memory location 7, and the cost per mile in memory location 8.
Summary.
So I tried to figure out a way that I could compare this to another calculator program on the Atari, and since I really never used one on the Atari before now, I don't have anything to compare it to, and I can't compare it to a calculator on a modern computer. So what I've decided to do is just kind of compare it to handheld calculators that were programmable that I've owned and used in the past. So with that said, I've used a TI-85, and I actually still have it, a Casio FX9750G+. Both of these had a pseudo basic-ish command set with if-then-else support, loops, and subroutines. And I've also had a Casio FX702P, which had a full basic interpreter. You're given enough program flow constructs that you can actually do without formal if-then-else clauses, so it's really workable the way it is. The one thing that I did have a problem with, as far as programming goes, is there's no way to display something meaningful for user input other than a string of numbers, which is also going to alter the X register or your accumulator. So you have to take precautions to save and load the X register before and after input. A prompt function would have been nice had they made that available to you. And there's also no way to label the memory locations. So between these two, what that means is you have to have some instructions for what to input, when to input it, and what the output means, and what the memory locations mean if you stick things in those memory locations. So the biggest complaint I have with this is that the editor really sucks wind. You have to manually step through all the instructions, and when you're inserting and deleting, it really does take a toll on you when you're having to constantly adjust where the program logic continues, because as you insert and delete, it breaks your go-tos because those instructions move on the memory locations. So it's best to plan this all out on paper, then input it at one time, save it to disk, print it out, check it again, return, re-enter the whole thing, and then just keep doing that whole cycle. At the editor, I can't say enough about how poorly it is implemented compared to other editors. The next thing I didn't like is when you are getting input from the user. The program stops and the user has to put in their input, press enter, and then you have to press shift at or use the CON instruction to continue the program. What it really should have done is once the user pressed enter to submit their input, is the program should have continued on at that point. The last complaint I have has to do with the input parser. Now the problems are specifically in hex mode. Because the letter A triggers the ABS function, you can't enter 5 plus A, but you can enter A plus 5, and it will still trigger the ABS function, but it will give you the proper result. So there's another problem entering hex values in general when you're in hex mode. For instance, any hex value starting with a letter cannot be entered. It dies at the second digit with error, not a valid command or number. But you can enter hex numbers ending with letters, such as 7F. Overall, I give Atari Calculator a bit rating of 6. I couldn't give it any higher due to the input problems and the editor. I really can't say enough about how poor that editor is. Oh, I don't miss it. So if it was 1981, would I use this program? I'm not sure. It depends. If I needed to save the output from several different samples of data and then import them into a spreadsheet, I might consider doing it. But with the availability and ease of use of the handheld calculators of the time, I might just resort to that. Now, today, would I use it? Definitely no. Today's calculators are much too sophisticated and a lot easier to use.
Fun facts.
First, the manual says to remove the cartridge, but the diagram shows an insert. Originally, this program was supposed to be released on cartridge, so they probably updated the text but didn't update the image. But still fun to look at. You can see an image of it on the website. And two, the package shipped with not only the manual and program disk, but also a blank disk. Maybe that was Atari apologizing for being 2 years late.
Listener feedback.
And now for some listener feedback. I've been holding off on this until I had a few episodes under my belt, and now I think it's time to go ahead and get started with it. So first, K Lund 1 on the Inversitaski website wrote in regarding the Season 1, Episode 1 Atari Word Processor. He says, "Good review, good podcast. The idea of an application podcast is perfect for me. I like Atari games, but his applications, as you stated, are where the work gets done. I have been collecting 8-bit and ST application software for years and have quite a collection. I used Atari Word Processor for several years in high school. I did all my reports on it. You mentioned that you can only work on one page at a time. I don't recall having to do that. I wrote many 10 to 15 page papers and it handled them just fine. Watching the formatting and pagination was kind of fun. I'm curious how you will handle Atari Writer with its different versions released in different years. Can't wait for the next podcast. Well done." Thanks, K Lund 1, for the feedback. It's been fun looking back at all these old programs, and I'm looking forward to doing more. The terms for pages and documents gets confusing with Atari Word Processor because the document can consist of many pages, which are not necessarily representative of a single printed page. Pages would have been better named as sections because in reality the page is a section of the document the way Atari had it set up. Next up, Alan, via the InVersiTASCII website on, again, Season 1, Episode 1 of Atari Word Processor, Alan writes, "Great review / podcast. Looking forward to more. I love the productivity software on the Atari 8-bits. It is something that gets shadowed by all the games. Glad they are getting some attention. Did you know that Atari Corp had contracted someone to write an office-like set of software but never released it?" He goes on to include a link for a review of the software. So the link points to a piece of software called Infinity by Matrix Software. This was a Lotus Symphony type of software, an all-in-one, and it was scheduled to be released at a price point of $49.95, which was quite a bit less than the competitors. It would have been a nice piece of software had it ever been released. The article has some very good information in it and is an interesting read. You should go check it out. I've updated that episode's show notes to include that. All right, next up is Siegfried via InVersiTASCII website, Season 1, Episode 2, Letter Perfect. "I like your podcast, and it's a good compliment for the other Atari podcasts. I used Letter Perfect, and later Data Perfect, during my senior high school years to write papers, etc. First on cart, and later on floppy. I can't really remember whether I used the upgrade option. It's good to be reminded how basic and sophisticated word processing was at the same time in the late 80s. One tends to forget that user interface basics like shift and move highlights were not invented yet, and every program had its own concepts and shortcuts. Looking back, less WYSIWYG probably resulted in more productive work, as you were not tempted to care more about correct indentations and graphical design of bullet points than about the actual contents. I agree with that. Of course, lacking the wisdom gained in the 30 years since, I totally fell for Signum on the ST, which had real fonts on screen and allowed you to move characters pixel by pixel. I can't recall whether I remember and used all those nifty cursor movement shortcuts, but I know that I don't bother to learn them today as I switch between different systems, and the lazy convenience of just having to grab a mouse to highlight some text keeps me from utilizing keyboard shortcuts, which would still allow for faster typing and editing. I did try a couple of other Atari word processors later on, but they never even came close. That greater than 50% market share was well earned, and it's good to know that the company and author who wrote it are still in the software business. By the way, my Letter Perfect cartridge, about 1983/84 vintage, does not work on XEs, and Letter Perfect carts are listed as 400/800 only in the Atari FAQ. Thanks, Siegfried, for the feedback, and I do agree with you a lot on the WYSIWYG contributing to a loss of productivity, because we all do get caught up in what something is going to look like on paper, and then we tend to lose what we actually want to get written down. Next up is an email from Pete. "I really enjoyed the first show. Felt odd being interested in a show about productivity software, especially on a 30-plus year old platform, but you managed to grab my attention. Listening to the show got me thinking about my own Atari word processor usage. I had mainly used Atari Writer, but also had an unusual package called Richmond's Word Processor with 80-column support by Computer Software Services. It featured a software-rendered 80-column display that was surprisingly easy on the eyes. Years ago, I posted a quick blurb about it on Atari Age, and he includes a link. I included a couple of screenshots in the thread if you'd like to check it out. I'm sure I still have the program and instructions somewhere if you have any interest in reviewing the software. Let me know if you'd like to look at it, and thanks for the informative podcast, Pete." Well, Pete, as you already know, I have contacted you, and I do appreciate your feedback. I have the Richmond's 80-column word processor in my hot little hands, and I have booted it up on the 130XE and played with it. It is actually quite nice and does a great job of rendering the soft font. I will have a review for it at some episode later, but due to its release date, it will probably be far later rather than far sooner. So one of the things that's delaying this episode, aside from its release date, is the fact that I can't successfully get a good quality screenshot captured from it. The software has apparently never been broken, so there are no copies of it floating around except those that are on the original diskettes. So until I work out a way to capture the screen on the computer, I probably won't have very much of a review for it. I have also been in talks with the author for an interview, and he is open to it. All right, next up is Michael via email. Hello again. Got to listen to the new podcast on Letter Perfect. Sounds like a mighty little word processor, an impressive piece of software for its time. It does seem like it would have set a pretty high bar for other word processors to meet. And yes, an actual LJK DOS sounds like it would have been a fantastic product if Mr. Leonardi, I hope that's spelled correctly, and the gang had put their heads to it. Thanks to him and offering his insights, by the way. I just left a nice review on iTunes, which was the main reason I was writing. Don't be shy about asking for reviews. Thanks again for InVersaTasking and keep up the good work. Well, thanks, Michael, for the nice words. It is Leonardi, to be correct. I was more intrigued about the graphic OS, but sadly none of that stuff remains. I missed a clean out by about 7 months. Ken doesn't follow the Atari scene anymore and was shocked when people were still interested in it. I pointed him at a few neat things that are happening now. There are two things I haven't done yet with the podcast. One is the feedback request. Well, that's actually happening now. And the other is the inclusion of listener feedback, which is also happening now. I wanted to get a few episodes under my belt so I could draw on them first. Now that I have that, I will ask that people go out to iTunes and give me a review, whether it's good or bad. Hopefully it's good. And that concludes the listener feedback. I appreciate everybody who did provide feedback, and I encourage you to do so again in the future. And if you haven't already, please go out and do so now. Thank you.
Special thanks.
First, I'd like to thank everybody that's been listening and continued to tune in. I'd like to thank everybody that's followed me on Twitter, everybody that's liked the page on Facebook, and everybody that's commented on the website. And again, if you wouldn't mind, please go out and give me some feedback, whether it's good or negative. Hopefully it's good, and enjoy your day. Thank you.
Contact information.
The show notes can be found on inverseataski.info. It can be found on iTunes using the search term Ataski or Atari. It can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/inverseataski. And you can also follow on Twitter with @inverseataski. To leave comments or suggestions, you can email wade@inverseataski.info or inverseataski@icloud.com. As always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode. Acacio
Goodbye.